In Fresno, and I'm standing up now, so I don't know why I'm nervous standing up. That's silly, isn't it? And this is Crack O' Dawn. I'm Barb, and Mia Masoka is in. Did I say it right, Mia?
Yeah, you did.
Is in the studio, and she's sitting at a very large stringed instrument called a koto. I sound like now I'm in talking to kindergarten. A very large 21 stringed instrument, but it's absolutely gorgeous. And she's going to play for us in a few minutes. But meanwhile, hi.
Hi, Mia.
Hi.
I don't even know if you can be picked up here.
Can you move over? I can move over.
Yeah, why don't you run around? I told her the show is pretty casual, and she can just run around to her mic now.
Okay.
So how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm getting ready to go to Seattle after this show, so.
I need my headphones. That's another reason I'm feeling naked. I'm feeling naked without my headphones, so tell us where you're going while I plug these things in.
It's a project with Mark Easy doing music to a silent film called The Dragon Painters, which is a Sesue Hayakawa silent movie from 1919.
So you're doing that in Seattle there?
Yeah. Leaving tomorrow morning.
Right at the movie theater?
It's at like the Seattle Museum.
And people are going to come and watch, and you're going to be doing the accompaniment?
Right. It's actually a group with Mark Izu and two other musicians.
So it's Clubfoot gone Asian. Clubfoot Orchestra goes Asian, or whatever. I'm being very silly. But yeah, this is getting better standing up. I didn't have the headphones on. I felt really naked. Oh, no, no. Now that I have the headphones, I'm just so cool, you know. It's funny. You get used to different things. What are you going to play?
Well, I'm going to play a new piece called Poetics. And it's based on two tritones, a whole tone apart. And it's organized by time, so time is the organizing material. So the first section, there's just the tritones are hidden and diffused from the length of time between the notes, so you don't really have the intervallic relationship in your head because of all the time that's happened. So and then later on they become much more condensed.
So the tritone is as if it were from, let's say, the span of from a C to an F sharp, which is how many semitones?
Well, it's the ones I use actually is C sharp to G and E flat to A.
And that used to be such a difficult, considered such a difficult interval to sing. It was called the devil's interval, the tritone.
Right, in medieval times.
That's about the only thing of theory I remember. I just used to badge the theory teachers into giving me an A, you know, and throw parties and stuff like that. But enough about me. So, and I noticed that on your score, there are all these strange semicircular shapes and forms. Are those the stems or what?
Maybe sloppy handwriting. I don't know,
but it's really beautiful. Looks very...
Maybe slurs. Maybe. I think that's what you saw, slurs. Okay. I think that's what they were. Yeah.
So, do you want to say some more, or are you ready to play? Let me just interrupt. Part of what she's doing is bowing and plucking, right?
Right.
And she's got her egg white in a little container for the bow. Have you put that on
actually
already?
The egg white is for my picks.
Oh, the egg white's for the picks.
Picks, bones.
Oh.
And then it helps keep the picks on my fingers or they would slide off.
And you have, I noticed, three picks.
Right, three picks. They're made out of bone and lacquer bands that keep them on the fingers, and they're kind of like extensions of fingernails, you know, kind of in a way.
What kind of bone?
I don't know. I don't know the kind. Sorry.
So you want to play?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So the music of Mia Masoka on koto. I feel so fortunate. I know there's not just an audience of one, but I felt that way. That was a Mi Masoka on 21 string kodo playing a composition of her own entitled
Poetics.
That was so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So I think we are getting a tape of that. I forgot to bring some blank tapes into the studio, but thanks to Kay Atchley, I think that we will have a tape. Although we didn't shut that door, so there were some footsteps coming from somewhere. But that worked pretty well, I thought. So, well, here I am back in my red mic. God, that's great. So when did you write this?
Well, I've been thinking about ways to use different spaces of time with the notes. So I've been thinking about that for a long time, and then I guess the piece came together about a month ago or so.
Yeah. And have you played, is this a premiere?
I played it at a concert called The Wanderers and the Firefly that I had at Mills College 2 weeks ago. So that was the first time. So it's still a pretty new piece. I'm still trying to figure some things out.
So it sounds like you've just played all over the world. I'm just reading Mia's bio, and you've just been in all over Asia?
I've toured to Japan twice, and I'm going to be invited again for the third time in November for the Ethnic Music Festival, and it goes to 5 cities in Japan.
So koto's originally an instrument for, did it start with gogoku music, which is high court music in Japan, or what?
Well, the koto was introduced to Japan through the Korean Peninsula from China, and one of the first ways it was introduced was through gagaku, the court music, and later it became, after the Shogunate's, without getting into a lot of historical stuff.
That's fine. That's one of my favorites. I'm just moving
around. With the
one
fall
of my favorite topics is history, so take it away.
With the fall of different courts for different dynasties, the court musicians lost certain status, and the music, as a result, went to other parts of the population, you know, and was incorporated into festival music, and solo koto traditions developed, and koto and shakuhachi, and koto and shakuhachi and shamisen developed, as well as the continuing tradition of gagaku. So it has a long tradition. There's this story of how this myth of how the koto was invented. And there was this beautiful, there was this goddess, it goes something like this, that there's this goddess, Amaterasu, who went into a cave because she was mad at someone. And because the sun goddess went into the cave, darkness fell upon the land, and all the plants withered and started to die, and nothing was growing. And so all the townspeople and millions of people came to the cave and tried to get Amaterasu to come out of the cave. And nothing could get her to come out. So there were some bows and arrows people, hunters, who had some bows and arrows. And so they had these, the bows, and someone strung the bows together, five bows or seven bows or 13 bows or something like that. And it created this stringed instrument and started plucking on on all these bows together, and it created such beautiful music that there was these erotic dancers who came and started dancing with, and they started dancing. There was all this this beautiful music and this dancing going on. And so then Amaterasu was wondering what kind of party must be going on. So she opened the door and came out of the cave to go and to join the festivities. And then the sun returned to the land and all the plants began to grow again and harmony and order was restored to the universe. And that's the origin of the koto.
So it's all because of some, you know, party girl wanting to get to the party. What a lure. That sort of makes sense, doesn't it? In terms of, you know, I sort of have met Mia at different parties. She's a very intrepid partier, I must say. But you must have been studying quite a lot and very hard to play that instrument so virtuosically. How long, when did you start?
I started about 7 years ago, and I got a hold of, it's kind of a funny story how I ended up getting a koto. I've always liked the sound of it, and I had been playing other instruments. And
like what?
I played piano for a while, and a little bit of guitar, but not very much. And I really was looking for where I can obtain a koto, because at that time there was no store that was selling them in San Francisco. And I had a cousin who had had one but no longer had one. And so I ran into someone, this guy, right outside my house, who was changing oil, that I knew from my undergraduate days. And I'm saying, Scott, what are you doing outside my house? And what are you doing changing oil outside of my house? And he said,
it's not Scott McLeod, is it?
No, okay. No. And he goes, well, you know, he had moved in next door or something like that, and he asked me what I'd been doing, and I said, I've been really searching hard for a koto. And he goes, oh, that's funny, because I know someone who's having a garage sale, and they're selling a koto. And it was this couple who had lived in Japan at one time, and that's how I got my first koto. It's kind of a funny story.
You said how long ago it was, but I didn't catch
it. It's about 7-8 years ago.
Oh, you mean that? Really, not that long.
Right, I was an adult, and
yeah, and we're not allowed
for a while.
I just asked her how old she was, and she told me, and then she said, just as we were going on the air, she said, "Don't tell my age." So I said, "Oh, you shouldn't have said that because I'm a rascal." But I will never tell her age ever.
No, I don't have any problem with my age, actually. No,
sure, you know,
I don't.
I don't either. Ha ha. But anyway. I mean, I never did, but it sort of gets a little worse and worse sometimes chronologically, those old numerals climbing and so on. So let's see, who have you played with that's... Oh, we don't have to talk. Well, Henry, you're coming... You have something coming up with Henry.
Oh, yeah, Cardula. I should talk.
He's
about...
so great. She's going
to... I'm sorry, what
talk
did you...
about
sorry,
what you're going to be doing. Yeah, you talk about what you're going to be doing, and then I want... I just want to tell you the outline of the show. The last hour and a quarter, we're going to just play Mia's CD in its entirety, because as it said in the folio, it is my current favorite. She sent it to me in the mail. I played it, and I play it every day, just about. And especially
You're
all,
kidding.
Yeah, I love it. And all of my all my dinner parties, that's my, you know, you get the Presto log and put on Mia's CD, and, you know, make the cordon bleu, and that's the formula for the good dinner party. But I mean, I really, really love it. So
well,
that's going to be the last hour and a quarter. And then we're going to hear, before that, we're going to hear, you did a concert from the 23rd, right, of April, and we're going to hear a cut from that concert, which Mia said came out really well. And, and on the CD, by the way, is Duke Ellington. I mean, there's all different kinds of things. There's improv, there's Duke Ellington cut, there's jazz, so, do you play, like, any traditional stuff, too, or not at all?
On that particular CD, there's no traditional.
But do you, as a rule, ever play it?
Well, in the morning, I always wake up and I start playing some traditional music.
Is that what you do when you wake up?
Yeah, I do.
Because I keep saying that I'm going to, instead of doing the crossword puzzle, I'm going to do the, get to the piano and at least play my, I love playing scales, but I don't do it. You know, I sort of sometimes do it at the end of the day or never or, you know, every other day. But I say that that's what I'm going to do in the morning. So is that good?
Yeah. It's usually the first thing I do when I get up is I put the bridges on my koto and I play a couple of traditional pieces. And it just kind of helps to ground me for the rest of the day.
How long? About
20, 30 minutes or so. Yeah.
But that sounds like, I'm happy that you said that. You know, that's kind of an inspiration.
Let me tell you about some of these shows coming up.
Okay.
There's one that's going to be at where I'm going to be performing, and also the San Francisco Gagaku Society. And there'll be some soloists also. Harold Yen, who's an incredible saxophonist, will be performing on Hichiriki and probably a saxophone as well. And Francis Wong, who's also another wonderful saxophonist, and he'll be performing on Ryoteki. And Marquise will be playing show. And that's going to be at the Freight and Salvage on Thursday, June 16, at 8 p.m. And that's at 1111 Addison, Berkeley. And for information, you can call 510-548-7603. And another one that's going to be just traditional gagaku, which is Japanese court music, that's going to be at San Jose. Is going to be presented by the San Jose Chamber Society at the First Unitarian Church of San Jose, which is located at 160 North 3rd Street in San Jose. That the date on that is Sunday, June 12th at 7 p.m.
You can give me those, and I'll announce those on my June show, too.
Okay.
Those are both things in June, which, you can leave those with me, and I'll announce them again.
Okay.
So I was thinking that we should hear that live piece from at the April 23rd show.
Okay. That piece is called Untitled Piece Number 1 for Sho, Koto, and Bassoon. And the bassoon player is Paul Hansen, who's also in the Paul Drescher Ensemble and the Peter Applebaum Ensemble. And the Sho player is Mark Izu, who has the group Circle of Fire and also does lots of scoring for films, silent films.
And did you write this piece?
Yes, it's based on, let's see, how do I describe this piece? There's parts that are improvised and parts that are composed, yeah. And it's kind of a balance of those two elements.
And what's it called again?
It's called Untitled Piece for Sho, Bassoon, and Koto.
Let's give it a listen right now.
Okay. Instruments. So maybe we'll play one of the second ones later, and this is the first one.
Okay.
The second one is for Hichiriki and snare drum.
Oh, that sounds great. So you were happy with that performance?
Yeah.
Sounded great to me.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we were in New Orleans, so I couldn't make it. Sorry.
That's okay.
What were you saying?
The performers did a wonderful job. It's very lucky to have such great performers.
And did you want to say something? Did you forget something else? First in the series of seven, and then...
The Sho is an instrument from the Gagaku Ensemble, and it has 17 reeds, and it's made to kind of look like a bird, a phoenix, and you have to heat it up in front of, because it has wax on it, and the wax has to kind of get softened so the reeds can sound. And the pitch it's not 440, it's about a quarter microtone below 440. So, but it works really well with the multiphonics of the bassoon.
How often do you have, How much in advance of performing do you have to do this wax thing?
The heater is usually on stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it has to be done just right after you rush out and then you sit down and begin performing. It might even be right next to the performer. The heater sometimes is right there on stage with them. But these, the reeds come from this one fence in Japan that's more than 200 years old, this one fence where all the reeds from the shows are made. And apparently there's only this one village that has this kind of reed that makes the best shows.
It's a fence or it's a tree? It's a fence?
It's a fence.
From a tree?
Right, from some kind of a
tree
that's really old.
That's incredible. Do you know what the name of that wood is?
The reeds? No, I don't.
You can just make anything up.
I know,
we
I don't want to
like
do that.
Fall for no clients. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know the name of
but
it.
But then knowing California, you know, Northern California, Berkeley, we'd get a call, and it would be someone who knew. So if there is any listener out there who is knowledgeable and knows what type of wood the reeds for that instrument, or the reeds for what?
Well, I believe they're bamboo.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it must
there,
be
it has it's
bamboo.
The bamboo is aged naturally outdoors for 200 years.
We're thinking that we would take some calls on the air. So, if you want to call in and talk to composer, Kotoist Mia Masoka, why don't you give us a call at 510-848-4425, and we'll put you right on the air. And meanwhile, we're going to talk a little about Gogaku, and we're going to hear some samples. Would it be cricket? I thought this is what I was going to ask you.
Oh.
If we talked about it, and then we had played some music, and then when there was a caller, could we pull it down, or would that be totally disrespectful? Because that's fine. You can say, yes, it would be disrespectful. So if it would, we won't
well,
do that.
Well, I don't know if it would be disrespectful. I don't know if the listeners would, if they'd want to hear it in its entirety. That's the only consideration.
That's what I mean with that, that they would,
that they might want to.
Yeah, that's definitely. When I first started, I was very raucous, and it was before the FCC. You know, you definitely can't say certain words. You know, there's seven words you can't say it. I'm not telling you what they are. But when I first started out, it was wide open. So I would discuss all kinds of unmentionable things. But also, if I was listening to something and I got bored, my board op would say, I just say, pull that down. And he'd say on the air, he'd say, oh, Barb, we're ending this because Barb thinks it's a piece of whatever, you know. It was like very disrespectful and very fun. And I've gotten so much more polite and restrained these days. And I wonder if it's like more boring or what. She
no.
thinks I'm, yeah, pretty unrestrained at this point. But anyway, so give us a call, 848-4425. The board's really lighting up. And we'll take your call in the air, and anything you want to ask Mia Masoka within bounds, she'll handle any questions. So it doesn't have to be, you know, she's, like I say, this is the first time I've met Mia that wasn't in a party situation. And, you know, she wears army boots and everything. And she's real cute. So, you know, anything you want to know. What? No, I'm just trying to make you more humanoid, you know, human being. Not this ethereal. She is this beautifully ethereal musician, but, you know, she also has the human side. That's all I'm trying to get at. So, if we don't hear from anybody within about a second, we're going to play some court music, right?
Okay.
So you have one more chance, 510-848-4425.
Do you want me to talk a little bit about?
Sure, we've got a caller, though. Let's take this person. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, can I speak to Dawn?
To Dawn? Well, this is... this is not Over the Edge tonight. This is Crack O' Dawn, and you could talk to Mia, the Koto player.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Is this Mia the Koto player?
Yeah.
Well, how come it's not over the edge?
Because the first Thursday of the month is Crack o' Dawn.
Amazing.
Like, get a life, you know? Wake up.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what.
What?
I'm in Costa Mesa, California, and I don't get KPFA.
Oh.
So.
So why are you phoning?
Because I wanted to talk to Don Joyce.
Okay. Well, phone next Thursday night, and thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that was fruitless, wasn't it?
I'll talk a little bit about Gagaku before we hear the music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ancient court music from Japan that developed in China during the Tang Dynasty. And one thing that I think is really interesting about Gagaku is that it has roots in from many different cultures. Like, why are you smiling at me like that?
I was just trying to say, do you want to take this call?
If it's one like that.
Well, let's see. Maybe. I hope that you're phoning
you
for Crack o' Dawn.
You screen them first, or I guess it's hard to. Huh?
I could, but I don't.
Okay. Go ahead. You can take it.
Hi, you're on Crack o' Dawn.
Hi.
On KPFA.
I am calling because I'm listening to the program.
Okay.
You can rest.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the pieces I heard. I have to do some mental stuff, and I like to hear that music because it is a little different from the kind of things I have to study. So.
Yeah, a lot of people that are studying or doing papers, you know, or they're in labs and stuff, and they like hearing this show because it usually is a little different.
Yeah, right. I like that very much about your shows generally. I'd like to ask something about the Koto. I'm a music student, and one of my interests is music of the East. I recently done a paper, you know, study all this junk about Indian music, the Indian classical music, which is quite a fascinating story in and of itself. But I know nothing about these systems that developed in Japan and and thereabouts. I would be very interested to. I mean, if you have any reference, it doesn't have to be like some academic, formal person that might be a source, but some place where I can look for information on that. I would be very interested personally.
Well, for information on Japanese music, the library is a pretty good source.
And, of course.
William Malm and Robert Garfias has written an excellent book on the history of Gagaku music, uh-huh. And there's some transcriptions and analyses in there as well.
God, I read William Malm in 76 and 70 when I was taking world music.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a good book.
Excellent. Oh, okay. Yeah, because, I had a lot of trouble finding references for some of the more obscure ideas about the musics of India, for instance, where they have a very, well, for a long time it was an oral tradition, for instance. So it's not really written down. And so that even when they do write it down, it's not clear what's really the music and what's sort of a Westerner's idea of what the music is. And so that's what my main concern is that I like to find out, somehow reach inside of the music, even just a little bit. I mean, obviously.
I think a lot of that knowledge is not written down, and a lot of those ideas and higher theories about Japanese music are not really articulated at first, kind of a Zen reason of non-articulation, non-concept.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of it seems to be developed after a relationship with a teacher or playing the music for a long time, and it becomes part of you after a while, those kinds of ideas, and they're not translated very well. And I think even the court musicians from the Gagaku court would always be reluctant to talk about musical theory and always be reluctant to talk about to answer specific questions from ethnomusicologists regarding what you're saying, because it's a very spiritual music, and it almost becomes trivialized when it goes into a textbook.
When you talk too much about it. In other words, you know, go to Japan, study with the master. Thanks for calling. We got to take another call. Hi, you're on KBFA.
Hi, my name is Ann Ueda, and I had a question for Mia.
Oh, hi, Ann. I know you.
I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about what it means as a Japanese-American woman to essentially go back to the Japanese culture to help you express yourself and your experiences.
Well, for me, going back to Japanese culture was a real real strong kind of passion experience for me. Oh, my headphones are going out. Since being Japanese American, there's the situation with this kind of ambiguity towards one's culture. So for me, it was very how do I say it really was empowering, or I don't know what words to use, but it was very important for me to go back and to study my own culture.
Can you also maybe talk a little bit about the kind of reception that you get from the Japanese people when you go there to tour?
Well, the reception's always been really positive. People come up to me in Japan and tell me that they usually don't like Koto music, but that they love my music. And people, I have Koto players come up to me and they say, I've been studying Koto and I play this way, but I've never seen anyone play all these different ways that you play. And and people are also very interested in Japan about Japanese Americans, because they don't get to meet Japanese Americans very often, and so they tell me, you know, you act American, but you are Japanese.
Oh, really?
You have Koto in your blood, and your Koto is your destiny, and you just act American, but you are Japanese.
Oh, that's great.
Here's a quote from the Sapporo Daily Times, describing Mia's music as being hauntingly beautiful and vital. And you have performed with Japanese court musician Sonobu Togi?
Right. He was our teacher for, he traces his family more than 1,000 years in the court family in Japan. And we were real fortunate to have him as a teacher. He was teaching at the time at the UCLA Ethnomusic Department in dance and music. And we flew him up once a month to
give us
lessons.
About that. Yeah. You know, that's how we do Balinese music. I mean, I play for Sakurjaya, and I play for the Onklung, which is a small ensemble, not the big gamelan orchestra, but that's what we do. We do lots of gigs and we make some money, and then we fly in a teacher, and usually their family. Usually the teacher is a composer, and then the wife is often a very esteemed dancer. And so the whole family comes, and that's the way that you feel the connection that you're getting. You're not getting a watered-down version of the music, and nor, that's the point, I was being flippant, but you're not reading a textbook, you're actually, you know, playing the music.
Right.
Hey, Mia, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks for calling, Ann.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Do give us a call at 848-4425 if you want to talk to Mia Masoka. Wonderful, wonderful Koto player and composer. So that's 848-4425, area code 510. So, yeah.
Well, I'll talk a little, I'll finish what I was saying about the gagaku.
And let's hear some, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to just put some on now?
No, finish what you were saying. Let me just first say that you're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. This is Crack O' Dawn you're listening to. I'm Barb with my wonderful guest, Mia Masoka.
You'll get my... Okay, so, let's see, what was I saying?
Oh, God, I've been interrupting. I've been remiss.
Well, Gagaku developed in the Tang Dynasty in China, and this was a really
China?
Rich period of history because they had 30,000 court slaves affiliated with the court, and...
30,000?
Yeah.
And what year is the Tang Dynasty?
I'm not sure, but I think it's around the 7th century. And musicians, envoys from India came and performed, and musicians from Korea, and musicians from Indonesia and what is now Vietnam, and musicians from different parts of China and also Japan. And musicians played together and improvised together, and this was really before the codification of strict disciplines as we know exist in these countries today. And it was a very multicultural environment and very, very rich environment. And the music, the court music, has since died in China, and it exists in an altered form in Korea, but it exists in its most pure state in Japan. So when people look to see what kind of what the music sounded like that long ago, Gagaku is often an example. And the time structure of Gagaku is really different. It's much slower, and the concept of unison is very different than a Western concept of unison.
Because of all the microtones, you mean?
Well, not so much pitch, but just even when you play together, you don't really play together on some of the pieces. And I guess, unfortunately, the music has changed a little bit recently, in the last 50 years or so, in terms of the pitches are closer to 440, and the rhythms are more strict and more Western. So there are changes, but basically it's really remained incredibly unchanged for very, very long.
Well, then let's hear some Gagaku music.
Okay. The first piece, is called Hyojo Netori, and it's like a tuning piece, and it's quite short and introduces the mode and the notes of the following piece.
Okay, so that's probably from, is that from 7th century, Gagaku?
That was an old one. It's medieval. It's Ringa. The piece is called Ringa, and it's in the Hyojo mode. And there's no specific date, but I think that one is about 750.
Wow, really?
It's actually 736.
I never realized it was that old, and I should realize that because, Asia is so much older than Europe, because things you hear about in Europe are like, they were practically in caves in 1000 AD, but obviously if musicians from India and China and Korea and Japan were all converging on each other's countries and traveling, they were very highly developed. And we tend to forget that sometimes, how old the societies are. And that thing is, we're like a scant 100 years or something. It's just ridiculous, isn't
it's
it?
It's ridiculous.
No wonder we're all like running around with guns, shooting each other, something. We're just barbarians.
Yeah, actually that piece is one of eight, what they call Rinyu pieces. And in 736 A.D., there were these two Buddhist monks who arrived at the capital of Japan, and one was from southern India, and the other monk, whose name was Phat Triet, was from what is called today Vietnam. And these two monks had met in China, and they came to Japan together, and this is one of the pieces that we just heard is one of the pieces that they taught to the monks at the Dajani Temple in Nara. So that's the part of the history to that piece.
You know, I better quickly tell you about some stuff that's happening before I lose steam and before, you know, whatever. Sunday, May 8th, there's a reception for a bunch of muralists at the Oakland Museum. And one of the muralists is Johanna Pothig, and another one is Eduardo Pineda. And they're... that's at the Oakland Museum, and the show is April 14th to May 29th, and the reception's May 8th. And it's another big event, mural event, Saturday, May 14th. It's Mural Awareness Week at South of Market Cultural Center Gallery, and that's on Brannan between 8th and 9th, and that's Saturday, May 14th from 2 to 6. And there's some awards, Lifetime Achievement to Emmy Lou Packard and Master Muralist Johanna Pothig. And May 8th, this is a wonderful thing, at 2 o'clock, Terry Sengraf does this Women Walking Tall thing, and it's women and females from about 7 years old to 80, 70 of them on stilts at Merritt Park.
Wow.
Right at the lake. Where does it say? Lake Merritt, Oakland and Grand, right across from Fairyland. Bring your own picnic. That's Sunday, May 8th in Oakland. And I'm going really fast here. Eliane Lust is a wonderful pianist, and she's doing Frederick Shevsky's 24 Ludes for piano and Frederick Chopin's 24 Preludes. And that's in San Jose at Villa Montalvo in Saratoga, California. Did I say San Jose? It's in Saratoga. And here's the you can phone the box office, 408-741-3428. I just had the wonderful opportunity tonight of seeing Alonzo King's Lines, and the music was just the most fabulous. The dancing was fabulous, but the music, for a music person, you could just, it was like being in Nirvana, because it was the Bach unaccompanied cello suites, a bunch of music by Peter Garland, a wonderful composer, and then live, Pharoah Saunders, Mark Little on keyboards, Pharoah Saunders, E.W. Wainwright on drums, and then a whole little contingent of the most amazing vocalists. So that's at Yerba Buena. And just phone 978-ARTS, A-R-T-S, 415-978-ARTS. And that's going on for the next few weekends. I urge you to see that. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on at the Lab, Carla Harriman's Memory Play, May 22nd. A whole evening of stuff by Scott McLeod, who's a very innovative artist. Just phone the Lab, 346-4063. There's stuff happening all the time there. When is the Scott McLeod thing? Let's see. Just phone the Lab, 346-4063. Anything that you go to there. That's at 1807 Divisadero at Bush. Let's see. Oh, yeah, the Glenn Spearman Double Trio at Kimball's Carnival, and that's May 12th. That's in Emeryville, 8:30, Thursday, 653-5300, area code 510, Kimball's Carnival. Glenn Spearman Trio, it's a double trio, is wonderful. Chris Brown, keyboards, electronics, William Wynant, fabulous percussionist. Glenn Spearman, Larry Oak, saxophones, double trio. Ben Lindgren, bass, etc. Guillermo Galindo, May 5th, 6th, and 7th. This Thursday, Friday, tonight. Well, that's over. Friday, tomorrow night, Saturday. In the Telling Dancers Group at Footwork, which is 22nd Street, Mission Street. For more information, you can phone 415-824-5044. Miguel Frasconi, fabulous composer, is doing a bunch of things. And he's going to do, Engaging the Imagination Improv Festival, 848 Divisadero, May 27th, Friday. And he's going to be at Hotel Utah, one of my favorite places. Do you like that place?
Yeah, they have great beer.
Fourth and Bryant. That's where I had my first book party, 1984. Mm. And now it's coming out again. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, post-industrial urban folk music double bill, Frasconi solo. And so that's May 10th, Tuesday night. Tom Buckner just got this in the mail today. Tom Buckner, wonderful singer. And he's doing such a mixed bag of things, from Schubert to Ravel to Bob Ashley to David Wessel. And David Wessel will be wonderful computer electronics composer, instrumentalist. Tom Buckner, baritone. Joseph Kubera, piano. And that is, and it's free to the public, Friday the 13th, if you dare, Santa Clara University. For more information, do phone 408-554-4073. That sounds fabulous. That's Friday the 13th at 8 p.m. Sounds like something I would definitely like to go to. Last but not least, Move Dance Theater presents Momentum. And that is at Yoshi's, Sunday, May 22nd. So, and Friday, May 20th at First Presbyterian Church. Yoshi's is, I'm sure you know, it's 6030 Claremont Avenue in Oakland. So, phew. What are we doing now? Let's hear more. Are we going to hear more from the live performance?
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We have the other one queued up. I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. It's called The Wanderers and the Firefly, and this is the second of a 7-piece series that I've written for Gagaku and Western Instruments, and it's for 3 hichidiki players and a snare drummer, and one of the hichidiki players ended up not being able to make it to the concert, so I had to fly someone from Los Angeles who plays hichidiki, and his name is Susumu Yuge, and he has been playing gagaku in his religious worship since 12 years of age, and he's also an assistant, he's a minister for a Buddhist group called the Tenrikyo Mission, and he teaches gagaku there, and he also performs Susumi and Fue for religious purposes, so it was really great to have him there. And the other two on this particular recording, hichidiki players, is Harold Yen. And Harold Yen is one of the founders of his group, is called Sonocentric. And he has that group with Vijay Iyer, and they're currently working on a new CD. They're a great new group. And the third hichidiki player is Forrest Fang, and Forrest Fang is a composer and a performer, and he has 5 CD releases under the name of Ominous Thud Productions, and he uses non-Western influences in electronic sound sources in his work, so they're really interesting people as well. And then the snare drummer is Joel Duvall, who is he also came out of Mills, and he's currently working with with the electronic instrument builder Don Buchla, installing an exhibit called The Virtual Orchestra at the Exploratorium.
Oh, great.
So this is all of them playing together on this piece called The Wanderers and the Firefly.
And this is a live recording from April 23rd at Mills College. And featuring Mia Masoka on koto.
Actually, I'm not performing in this
piece. Oh, you're not performing
no.
on this piece. Okay. Excuse me.